Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. By the way, right there, you just got a preview of our guest today. Today's guest is Scott Ryan. But before we get to that, unfinished business. If you haven't downloaded the He Changed It app, what the heck are you waiting for? Download it. Technically, that bad boy is still in beta, but it's already effective. There's a lot of guys who keep reaching out saying, thank you so much for the resources. Thank you so much. The community's starting to grow. I think that it's pretty obvious what the app is going to be and what it's turning into. Lots of cool things coming. I sound like a broken record when I say that, but I'm married to the founder. Candy and her team are doing so many neat things, and I get to see it firsthand, but I also get the easy job of just hosting the podcast while they do all the heavy lifting. The He Changed It community is growing. Check it out. HeChangedIt.com has all of the info. Also, if you wouldn't mind sharing, subscribing, liking in whatever order you want this podcast, we would very much appreciate that as well. Whether you're watching us on the YouTubes or you are listening on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you very much for all of the support that you've given He Changed It so far. Like Candy keeps hearing from folks who are advising on this company, and it's growing. You know, it's not necessarily low-hanging fruit, but the orchards are full of men out there who just need a little bit of a helping hand. She's calling it, her shorthand for it is prevention in your pocket. But at the end of the day, there's a lot of guys right now who are connecting in the area of mental wellness in all sorts of facets. Today's facet is going to be a continuation of a recent podcast that we had with Bruce Ross. If you remember Bruce Ross, he battled depression and has for 45 years, and he talked about his journey. We're going to talk to another friend of the show who has battled depression. Scott and I have talked about him coming on and talking about this for a while now. There's a perfect opportunity to do it because we're also going to do it coincidingly with the release of his new book. Author Scott Ryan has released all sorts of amazing books to do with the television universes. His book on 30-something, his book on moonlighting, which he was already on here as a guest, and of course my favorite of his, the Last Days of Letterman. Scott is, I'm gonna say gigantic in the Twin Peaks community. And if you know the show Twin Peaks, cult show from the 90s, revolutionary, groundbreaking television that has spanned decades, really, because a couple of years ago, Twin Peaks The Return was filmed on Showtime. Phenomenal bookend to the series in the 90s, continuation. Scott has been part of that community and a big part of that community in the fan fests and different things. He wrote a book, Fire Walk With Me, Your Laura Disappeared. This is a deep dive into the big screen adaptation of Twin Peaks. The prequel to the 90s series, Fire Walk With Me, was David Lynch's, I don't even know how you want to say it. All of his films are curious and unique. This one here, as a prequel to the series, very complex, lots of very complex ideas, lots of themes that are what some would say taboo to talk about. And at the end of the day, Scott wrote a book that goes in and does a deep dive about it, but it coincides with his own life. In that book, talking about the show's legend, Laura Palmer, he goes in and makes it autobiographical in many ways. And he really shared a lot of himself in this book. And what came out is how he personally battled depression and how this movie helped him deal with that. And as he and I were talking about it, he reached out to me and he said, hey, look, I would love to come on your men's mental wellness podcast and talk about depression. And I'm like, well, the lineup of people who want to talk about depression is long, but Scott Ryan, you feel free. Come on in. You want to talk about depression? Let's do it, man. Scott, welcome back to the show, my friend.
Thank you so much. I'm sort of embarrassed to be here today because when you said we were going to talk about pocket prevention, I thought it was a completely different subject and the pocket prevention I had in high school that really saved my life, I think, and would have put me on a different path.
My friend, lots of other lives too were saved.
So now I have to really rethink what we're here to talk about today. But thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. Oh, Scott,
I love you, man. And I'm so glad that you're here. Before we get to the main subject of why you're here, I got to say this. As far as Twin Peaks books go and different things, you've got the official stuff, Laura Palmer's diary and things that came out officially. I got to put this at the top of the pile of Twin Peaks commentary material. This is a phenomenal book. If you know, and if any two or three of our listeners or viewers out there know a Twin Peaks fan, get them this book. Scott Ryan Productions, Fayetteville Mafia Press, Fire Walk With Me, Your Laura Disappeared. Oh my God. This is a phenomenal, phenomenal book. Clearly you wrote it from your heart, but you also very much used your mind and the minds of many other Twin Peaks experts out there. How long did it take you to write this book?
This was a very strange book for me in that I did it in different sections, and that is the first time I've done that. I really was working on Moonlighting while I was working on this book, and I would go back and forth and I would do some interviews for both. And it was kind of a strange thing because I had this deadline of the 30th anniversary of Fire Walk With Me that was coming up. Right. So, whereas my other books, I didn't really have like a specific deadline that they had to come out, but this one had to come out in 2022 to be the 30th. Right. So I think it probably took me 6 months, but I think I probably worked on it for a year and a half because I was getting interviews and going back and forth. It was a little strange. And honestly, the book would be completely different if I worked on it today. I sort of just wrote what I was feeling that day, and stories would just pop out at me. What I was going to call this book is a movie memoir, because to me, that's what it is. This is, yes, it's about Fire Walk With Me. Of course it is, but it really isn't. Like, it has nothing really to do with the movie at all, kind of. Like, I don't really get into what the movie's about, really. I mean, it's more how I carried this movie with me for 30 years in my chapters that I'm writing. And then I interviewed the people who made the movie.
Yeah, I appreciate where you're coming from when you say, you know, you were writing about how you were feeling that day. I would submit maybe you were also writing how you felt over the last 30 years as well. Like, this was probably a pot that was on, you know, simmer for a long, long, long time, because you were pulling out all sorts of memories. You know, all my favorite albums right now are turning 30 years old, and a bunch of my favorite movies are turning 30 years old, Fire Walk With Me being one of them. You know, there's a long, rich history that you had that is very evident in this book.
Well, it's always weird when someone asks, what's your favorite movie? And I rarely give the answer Fire Walk With Me, because it's a weird movie to be your favorite movie. Like, why is this your favorite? Like, what is that saying about you? Yeah. I mean, it's definitely the movie I've seen the most in my life, barring The Little Mermaid, which played nonstop at the video store that I worked at in the 90s. Right. But as far as me choosing to actually sit down and watch, Fire Walk With Me is the movie I've seen the most. And it's because, I don't know, like, if you aren't feeling great about yourself, it's a good place to sit. It's a nice, you know, I mean, it's a horrible movie as far as topic. Sure. It's maybe, you know, it's the worst topic of any movie ever.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say that is what the ending is. To me, it has a beautiful, positive ending. And so that cathartic experience that you get from Fire Walk With Me I mean, I can't think of another movie that's like it. I really can't, that you have, that really puts you through the ringer, but you come out feeling like there is hope.
I think that's a beautiful way of looking at it. A really, really hard journey to get to the hope. And I think that that's where a lot of guys are right now. There's a lot of guys who have silently battled whatever demons they might be battling. It might be depression. It might be addiction. It might be, not living their true life, living a different life. We talked about this in the last podcast you were here. It's worth reiterating, certainly worth reiterating. You talked about it in the book. You had this fear going through your college years and beyond, that you were going to be stuck in a cubicle. And ironically, that's what happened. You got stuck in a cubicle, and it was every bit the hell you thought it was going to be. You broke free of that. You talk about that in this book. There's so many men that are going through this. The topics he's talking about, by the way, everybody, if you haven't watched Twin Peaks is this amazing, quirky piece of art television, brilliant series in the 90s about a gal in the first episode in a high school in a small Washington state town. A girl is murdered, and the series unravels, and then as it starts to unravel, who killed Laura Palmer was the mantra, was the headline 30 years ago. Who killed Laura Palmer was everywhere. Some of our listeners or viewers might remember that. And then the movie comes out, and the movie shows Laura Palmer's life just before she passed away, and it wasn't good. There were some really hard things in there. There was sexual abuse. There was incest. There was psychological torment. There was a supernatural torment. There was all sorts of these things that were happening to poor Laura. These are the themes that Scott's talking about. And I love how art many times, and I think there's a clue here. You said, Scott, that this is a good movie. If you weren't feeling right about things, whatever, this is a good movie to sit with. It's relatable, right? Art is that the thing with art, is that we can kind of relate to it a little bit here, and it helps unlock maybe what we're feeling.
Well, I would submit that it is art with spaces that allows you to sit with it. And that to me is the difference between a David Lynch film and, let's just call it, not a David Lynch film, because I don't even know. There's kind of no one like David Lynch that does this, but he could care less if you understand what's going on. That is of no interest to him. His feelings about you are really low. Like, he doesn't care about you. And in art, that's a really good thing, because what he's doing is he's only thinking of the story he wants to tell. And he's not worrying if you're going to get it. And even better, he's not worrying if your mom's going to get it or your aunt. He's just going to tell the story. And in doing so, there are so many pieces that you have to put in. So you get out of Fire Walk With Me or Lost Highway or Mulholland Drive what you put in to it. And in the book, I talk about that I saw the movie the day it opened in a very small town in Ohio. And it was, to me, the just like crazy that this movie came to little old Canton, Ohio. You know, I mean, just like, what? And, you know, there was pretty much nobody there. I mean, there might have been 26 people there on opening night, Friday night. Yep. I was there with the people that I was surrounding myself with at that point in my life, and they all hated it.
Sure.
They hated it. They thought, well, no, there was no donuts. You know, where was the coffee? Where is the humor?
Yeah.
This wasn't what I signed up for. And they just really hated it. Well, I was like rocked to my core, because I had felt like someone looked in at me and just threw it right there up on the screen and showed everyone. And of course, everyone hated what they saw, which is really what you what makes you feel real good about yourself. And you're like, oh my gosh, I think this movie is just me. And you know, like critics hated it, everyone hated it. And I wouldn't say that I loved it. Like, you know, I was quiet. We all went out and stood in the parking lot and everyone bitched about it. Mm-hmm. I just was quiet. I went back to see it 3 days later by myself in the afternoon. Like, I snuck away to try to see this movie again, and I saw it. And again, it was probably the second time that I really could focus on Cheryl Lee. And that mattered more to me than the plot. It was the actress who played Laura Palmer. Why did her cries seem real? Like, she cried with her whole body. Her torment was everything about her, in her eyes. And no one could see that she was tormented. No one could see this. Everywhere she goes, she's the homecoming queen. Everyone loves her, you know. And critics, it's so funny how people view a piece of art that is really good, because they were like, well, this is dumb. Everybody saw this. They should have known what was happening. Yeah. Yeah, that was the point, you dumbass. You hated the movie for the exact reason that it's great. Like, yeah, in front of everyone, she is drowning and nobody sees this. And then, of course, she dies at the end of the movie. That's not a spoiler, because she's dead at the beginning of Twin Peaks, and you know that's coming.
Yep.
Which is another thing, like, if, you know, I always say, like, if you have depressive tendencies, oh, a happy ending where the main character dies, like, dial me up, man. Now we're talking about right where I want to sit. Like, yes, give me a happy ending where they die. So I sort of kept that with me, you know, and what I would do is every year on my birthday, I watched Fire Walk With Me through my early 20s. Which is probably not what you should do. I mean, it's not what you should be doing on your birthday, but it was like my thing to do. It was like, I'm going to do my Fire Walk With Me watch. Yeah. And it all had to do with like studying. Again, Laura Palmer's not real. I don't consider myself to be Laura Palmer. Right. I was never sexually abused, and I don't relate with that. So many women do. They go to Laura for that. And she is a great, she's like an icon for women who have been sexually abused, because she takes control of what's happening to her. And I mean, you could debate about it, and Twin Peaks fans do, but in my opinion, she does win in the end.
Sure.
And you know, gets control back of her life. I mean, she dies, but that's neither here nor there. But I don't know. It was Cheryl Lee that, as an artist, it was her art that I kept looking at. And why can't I do that? And why can't I say who I really am to people? But instead I would hide it with comedy, with jokes, the smiley face that I put out there as that person. And even though I'm not doing what I should be doing, you know, nobody noticed, nobody cared.
Yeah.
And so that was a place for me to really sit in through all those years.
I'm glad you brought up Cheryl Lee. We're going to get to her, and actually, you know what, talking in the book about, until, you know, your book culminates with an interview with Cheryl Lee. And this is an interview that isn't just you meeting her for the first time. This is after you two have established a beautiful rapport and friendship, and for you, a dream come true, you know, kind of a situation where you've become friends with her, and then you have an interview with her. That's near the end of the book. But going through the book, though, talking about, yes, you talk about some of the different plot points, you talk about some of the different tie-ins, hidden meetings, and then behind the scenes stuff. But as that's happening, there's a narrative that's building where you talk about Cheryl's performance as Laura Palmer in this movie. And there are cast, there are crew who are talking about Cheryl's mental state during filming all those years ago. And how there were people who were really legitimately concerned for her. and you talk about this performance that's on screen that that you were able to 100% relate to and see that. And during filming, people were concerned about her. And that's how real the performance is. It's somebody who is going through that right in front of you, and they're bearing it for everybody. And it's timeless. You've watched that movie every year since it came out, like on your birthday. Like it holds up like crazy. But
well, it does hold up. But no, I don't do that anymore. Okay. I don't watch it on my birthday anymore. I probably haven't done that since my 20s, because okay. Once I had kids, you know, your birthday becomes about them, not you.
Yep.
And then by the time the kids are out on their own, I'm in a different point in my life where I'm actually not who I should be now.
Right.
You know, like there's a different spot. So, and actually there's many reasons the book is called Your Laura Disappeared. Comically, a lot of people think it's plot based because in the new Twin Peaks, they do a thing that maybe Laura did disappear. And I was like, oh my God, I wasn't even thinking about that. Like if it has to do with me.
Yeah.
I mean, in one way, my Laura has disappeared because I met Cheryl Lee. And right. So Laura Palmer at that icon in the homecoming picture is gone. So the last time I saw Fire Walk With Me was after I had spent some time with Cheryl, probably like four different times. Mm-hmm. And now the movie's completely different to me. Like, cause I know Cheryl and I know Ray Wise, and they're actors to me now. So my Laura has really disappeared. It's really hard for me to lose myself in the film anymore, to be honest. I know that everybody wants to, you know, like if I was a real performer, I'd lie and say it still means the same to me, but it doesn't. It's disappeared because, you know, I get it now. It was a mystery to me. I didn't understand how she was creating this thing I'd never seen on film. Now that I know her, it's not a mystery to me. That's who she is.
Okay, that being said, to go back to that previous point, your friend Cheryl Lee, who filmed this movie, that there are people out there who say it's the greatest performance by a female actor in history. There are people who have submitted that she was so deep into that role, and what was asked of her, what she gave. What was asked of her and more and more and more and more. So your friend Cheryl still went through a lot of shit when she made that movie.
Definitely. And this is me talking. I've never asked Cheryl this. Cheryl's never said this. I'm not giving away a confidence. This is me just completely talking out of my ass.
Okay.
I believe she has PTSD from the filming of that movie, even to this day. I think it did affect her and has affected her every day of her life, because yeah. That's literally how much she gave to this role, because yeah. It's that, you know, she put herself in it that much. And I could see someone shrugging their shoulders and thinking, come on, it's just a job. And I think that could be true for many actors, but that isn't Cheryl. Like, I've spent time with her. She's that way about her coffee or about you telling her a story about anything. Like, she really is in with you. You're mesmerized by her. And it's not just me who says that. You could find thousands of people who have met her and they would say that. And she's had to carry this thing about being an icon for abused women. And so many women are sharing with her their honest to goodness true stories wherever she goes, and you've got to take that all the time. And I just can't imagine taking that in everywhere you go. She's just an incredible person to me, maybe the most incredible person.
Well, you know, I can't diagnose PTSD, but when you read the interview with her at the end of the book, and she's talking about this time in her life where she was in her 20s, early 20s. I think she was 23 when she filmed Firewalk with Me. You know, still trying to figure things out. She's working with world-class actors, with, you know, arguably one of the greatest auteurs. I don't know if I'm even using that word right, but David Lynch certainly is one of the greatest directors that we've ever seen. You know, and she's trying to figure all that out while diving into a role that has all of these really difficult things. Like you say, since that movie has come out, she is a beacon, or a, you know, certainly a light in the dark for people who have gone through this. And you yourself, at the same time, you know, the reflection of the stuff you were going through silently and seeing this on film, I mean, certainly it's evolved her as to where she's at right now. If you read that interview, I don't know if it's PTSD or not, but it certainly has made its imprint. You're never the same after some of these experiences. I want to talk about chapter 11 a little bit of this book, because I want to read a little bit out of it, because you get really raw and you get really vulnerable. And we've talked about being raw and vulnerable before, but I want to go through and talk about Scott in his 20s versus Scott in his 40s now, with all this reflection.
It's 50s.
Are you in your 50s, buddy?
Yeah, I think I'm 52. It changes every year, so
right.
I'm not sure.
Okay, you're 50s now. For those of you who know me in person or from my online persona, right here, okay. for those of you who know me in person or from my online persona, it might come as a shock to you that I battle chronic depression. I've spent the majority of my life putting on a happy face and entertaining strangers because of my inability to experience joy for myself. That is a heavy admission. When you wrote that, were you in the zone and just writing and writing, and you're like, yeah, this is what's naturally going to come out? Or was there like writing, a pause? All right, am I going to go down? Okay, yeah, I guess I'm going down here. Like when you wrote that and you admitted that, was that impactful for you? Or have you done it so much in the maybe the more recent past that it was very easy for you to talk about that? It's a path you've gone down.
If I remember correctly, that's in the first paragraph.
That's close? Right at the beginning, yeah. Of chapter 11.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, because a good writer would have put that at the end. Okay. But see, I don't want to tell that. So that, it's funny that you read that sentence, because I tried to hide that sentence because I didn't really want to say it. So I said it early, and then I talk about other things.
Right.
You know, because I don't really want to. But I knew I had to write this chapter, because I have loved Firewalk with Me forever. And I've, you know, people knew that I did. And they also knew that I had a love for Cheryl Lee. But over time, I could see that people thought that the way that I felt about Cheryl Lee was like how, you know, a teenager in the 80s might have felt about Madonna. Like I was in love with her, or, you know, I wanted to marry Cheryl Lee or something like that. Right. Mostly because I always say I want to marry Cheryl Lee when I'm on things. That could be where the confusion came about. But really, it wasn't true. It's not that I don't think she's beautiful and that she's one of like my favorite actors, but you know, it was more than that. There was, and I thought, look, if you're going to do this book, you have to tell the truth, or otherwise, why am I doing this? Why am I picking this movie and talking about it? Well, I have to be honest and say that, you know, Laura Palmer cannot experience joy, and that's why she, you know, does the Meals on Wheels and teaches Johnny English and, or I guess Josie English and teaches Johnny school. And does she, all she does is give, because she has a black hole in herself because she's been sexually abused since she was an early teen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had to just be honest and say, part of the reason that I'm the comedian I am, not all of the reason, because I just was born that way. But a lot of it has to do with that I cannot feel those things. So why not give them? It's easier for me to give them out because I do not experience them.
I think it's interesting that you talk like you are so much the Twin Peaks aficionado, and you have an amazing critical thinking mind that's able to take pieces and discern and to make leaps and conjectures in just in looking at the art. You know, just like a Star Wars fan many times has an encyclopedia knowledge of droid names and things like that. You didn't have to write that, Scott. Like you could have easily faked it without going into the autobiographical nature. Like you're that much of an expert. But the movie intertwined itself with your heart so much, and it did have this impact with you. I'm going to say this flat out, because there's a lot of guys who are listening to this right now that are battling depression or don't even know that they're battling depression. They just know something's wrong and they haven't diagnosed it or had it diagnosed, or they don't like the word. You could have faked it. You could have glossed over it the way that so many of us gloss over these feelings that are inside of us, but you didn't. You came out and you talked about it. I want to ask about the joy is that finite? The idea that you don't experience joy. And so you want to put joy on other people and all that. Is that something that is a 100% constant for you, or have there been windows or times before, during, since, you know?
I mean, I don't know if I could answer that as far as how would I know?
Sure.
Because I don't know what other people experience, but true enough. I mean, I would say it's true enough that I just don't. That isn't where I sit. You know, like, I don't know. That's just not where I come from. That's not what I'm about. So it's hard for me to really know. I mean, because there's a difference between having fun. I have fun every day. Mm-hmm. You know, I am not a sad person. You would not see me be a sad person. That is not where my gear is. But do I feel like, I guess part of the other thing is, I could see how simple it would be for someone, like when you keep saying that I'm a Twin Peaks aficionado and I know all this stuff, like that just doesn't sound right to me. Mm. But I mean, I guess it is true. I do know a lot about Twin Peaks. But I didn't want someone at home. That's weird. Why would I say at home? Because to me, it's a TV show, but it's really a book. That's sure. the thing. But, you know, I didn't want someone to go like, oh, what is this guy? I mean, he gets to talk to Mark Frost and Cheryl Lee and, you know, all these actors. And he don't know nothing about being depressed, or he doesn't know. That's bull. He's got everything. Right. And it's like, I worked so hard every day to get here. I don't have anything. Like, I've been giving nothing. There's not one thing that I really have. It has been things that I have clawed and begged and scraped to get out of. I mean, and that was sort of the point of that chapter, to say, because the book, so many people get the book and then they say to me, I skipped right to the Cheryl Lee interview. And then you think, yeah, you missed the point of the book, because you really want to, you're rolling to that. That's why it's the end.
Oh yeah, it builds. It builds, you know, to that interview. Absolutely.
You want to get there. And before you can get there, I had to take you back, because I do talk about seeing the movie in the first chapter, but I'm not exactly honest about seeing it. I sort of just set that thing, but I don't really say where I was.
Yes.
But it was more like, I felt like I had to be honest to that idiot, that 22-year-old Scott, who I abhor so much. Like, I can't stand that guy. I mean, he needed to know, like, it's going to get there. And I could have got there that day. I mean, why didn't I say, I loved the movie. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. I think she's telling us all something there. Like, y'all missed it. And why didn't I start writing then? Why didn't I say, I'm actually going to find Cheryl Lee. Like, I'm going to find her. You know what? I just heard Dave takes interns. Like, I'm going to go to New York City and be an intern.
Yep.
With Dave, because I can do all these things. Like, look what she just did. But it wasn't in me at that time. I didn't have that. Like, the person you know today, there's not anything of that person here. I wasn't, you know, I had to go through so much to get here. And I don't go into all that in the book because it is a Twin Peaks book. Like, so I immediately, like, I have that sentence and then I don't really go back there very much because I didn't want to overshare because sure. I am Gen X. And, yep. You know, we don't, like, that sentence was enough. And then I just tell the story of, yeah, I was so fearful being a cubicle and then I was there and I've told the story here before, so who cares? But
it's worth repeating. No, because you were there. But, you know, and we do wish that we could take that wand and the angel dust and throw it back on to us at that age to say, wake up. But it's really a progression and growth to get us to that place. And you did go through darker times with the tools, by the way, to help at least sit with it, this movie being one of them. You know, you went through these darker times and these realizations. You know, you did get thrown into the cubicle and then suddenly break free and claw your way to living the life that you want to live that leads to genuine fulfillment. And it's more than the paint by numbers situation that we're taught to strive for. It's you actually doing the introspective work and the admission, I'm not happy and I'm going to do what I can, even though I may not feel joy the way others feel joy, because it looks like they're feeling different things than I feel, but I'm not happy. So I'm going to work my ass off to get to a place where I can just realize, oh, it's just a mindset. If I wanted to, I could just choose to walk in the other direction, but it takes a lot of work to get to that truth, doesn't it?
Well, it does. And, you know, one of the things I've been dreading this podcast all morning, I just did not want to do this at all. I kept hoping you'd have a horrific accident and we wouldn't have to do this. But damn it, you were safe yesterday. But one of the things I was thinking that I wanted to be sure that I say is, man, I don't blame my parents. This isn't about my parents. This isn't about my friends. This isn't about, you know, any exes I had. That's bullshit. This is about me. It was who I was then. You know, it is true. No one ever said to me, you're majoring in business? I think you should be a writer. Like, you've already written like 4 movies and 2 novels and you're doing what? You know, because I was already making stuff as a kid.
Yeah.
No one ever said that to me. Mm-hmm. And who knows what that would have, if that would have helped. But I don't think it was. I was truly shy and I just didn't have what I have now. I mean, it's like when the time came, and of course, any opportunity that comes my way, man, I'm on it. And that's the thing. Like yesterday, I interviewed Patricia Arquette.
Yeah.
That's huge. That's the biggest get I've ever gotten. My first Oscar winner.
Yeah.
And, you know, it always amazes me how people take it like, well, of course, Scott's interviewing Patricia Arquette. But it's like, no, do you know how hard that is for someone as small as me to get to someone like her? Like, it's impossible. Yeah. And like, even she doesn't realize it. And we had a great talk because she's used to talking to people who don't care. And so she got what I give someone when I interview them, which is that warmth.
Yeah,
where just like you do, you create this space where I can tell things that I'll regret and I'll sure as hell never listen to this my whole life. And, but also I did play with her and made her laugh. And so she was comfortable and things like that, but you better believe she wanted to see some of my books afterwards. So I sent her Moonlighting and Firewalk with Me, but I put a note in it and I said, like, you know, I'm a small business. I Struggle to Get By. If you enjoy either of these books and you feel comfortable in tweeting a picture out or Instagramming it, it'd really make a difference to me.
Yeah.
That little thing right there, that 22-year-old sitting in the dark in Firewalk with Me, he didn't have that.
I was going to say, how much growth did it take to ask this, your first Oscar winner? Okay, so big deal.
Right.
How much growth did it take for you to be able to write that sentence? Could you please, or would you please, or would you mind, right, you know, asking for that help? And that's where so many men are right now, is in a, that place of vulnerability. Vulnerability is the short way out of where they're feeling right now, but it's like lifting 10,000 tons. It might as well be like trying to open a vault door. It's unlocked, but what we bring to it and the thoughts that we put at the, you know, the armor that we put on, won't let us get through that short distance. And this is where your message is so damn important, because like you say, you could have gone back to that 22-year-old. If you could have snapped the fingers and showed that realization, holy, that is a big piece of light. But it took, you know, a couple decades of growth, a whole bunch of books where you battle imposter syndrome, you're battling all these things, plus, you know, the depression stuff. I appreciate the fact you talk about this.
Here is what I don't remember if I put this in that chapter. I don't remember if I did or not, but back then, you know, like I went to college and majored in business because that's what my dad wanted me to do.
Yep.
And I did it. So I did what I was supposed to do. And really nobody cared what I did. No one was interested in me and no one cared what I did. There came a point where I said, I'm just going to do what I want and I'm going to say what I want. And you know what? No one cared what I did and no one was interested in what I did. And once that realization came to me, and that is what I always tell people, I've lived life both ways. I've lived it for everyone else and I've lived it for me. And to be honest with you, no one gave a shit about me either way. No one cares about you. And accepting that no one cares about you. In fact, I have a title. If I ever write a autobiography or a way to live a life, the title of my book is going to be You're Not Important and Neither Are You. Because it needs to be said twice, because that is the key. Like, I don't matter.
Yeah.
My little thoughts, like, Patricia Arquette is not going to get that letter and think a thing about me asking her to tweet it. I mean, she's either going to, first of all, she may not even get it. It's going to her agent, and her agent may take those books and he may throw them right in the trash can. But she might read Moonlighting and be like, wow, this is good. I kind of like this guy. You know, this is a good book. She might take a picture of it now because it's in her head. But she's not going to think about it.
Yeah.
She's not going to care. It's not going to change our interview. She's not thinking about me today.
Yep.
And realizing I didn't matter is what made me matter.
That is a profound thought. And there are a lot of guys out there who are taking themselves and their situation. I've got to be very careful how I say this. They're taking themselves too seriously. Almost they're adding extra weight onto their shoulders for no reason. When at the end of the day, they could just shrug off that weight in that the freedom in that statement that you just made, is incredible. We think that we matter more than we do, to the people around us and all that. But at the end of the day, we can let a lot of that go if we even just choose to. Like, sometimes it's that simple, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, I really think that's the truth. And it sounds, and I get that when you're in it, and that's the thing, like, when I wasn't creating, the depression was humongous. It hangs on you, and it's hard to start something out. When you are creating, and like now, because I got that interview and then it led me to other interviews, now my next book's going to be on Lost Highway, and I didn't even know I was going to do this, and things lead to another thing.
Yep.
Because you get, and you don't get those opportunities when you're scared and you're fearful and you're hiding and you're shy. And I get that. Like, I don't know if someone was listening for them to say, again, that guy doesn't understand. But I don't really know Cheryl Lee. Like we've met, let's say 5 times, and I suppose I could call her today if I really wanted to, but, and then what? Like, it doesn't really change your life. It just gives you a bit of confidence. She's not like coming over for dinner and, you know, we're watching reruns of Seinfeld or something. Like, although she should.
That would be great.
I think she'd have a good time. But it's just like the same, like with the Dave people or whatever, like meeting these people and, you know, hearing Brian Tetta's story is the one that really hits me because he just did what I should have done. And we're about the same age. And he just went to New York and he was like, I love Dave. I'm going to work for Dave. I never would have had that thought. It's not like I had it and I didn't try. I didn't know you could just go to New York and be on, and start working for Dave.
Yep.
I mean, of course I should have done it.
That's that freeing part. For the guys out there who don't think they could write a book or paint a picture or write a song or learn an instrument or whatever, the thing that they want to do that just seems like the boulder that's impossible to push up the hill, it's actually not impossible. You know, we can go and do anything. Sometimes we just don't give ourselves the permission to do it. Brian Tetta, you talk about that, had no baggage in that department. And said, oh yeah, yeah, sure. I'm going to go become an intern at Letterman and start moving my way up in his company. And then when Letterman retires, I'm going to go over to The View and be the executive producer and accept the Emmy. And like, holy shit, really? You can just do that? Yes, you can just do that. And you know, for guys who are, you know, they're a couple kids or a wife or a job and a career into where they're at, I'm not saying you can unpack it that day, but you can start building things on the side that day. And start making, you know, plans and preparations and dreams and aspirations, and you say them out loud and you say them to a person or two, and boy, it's surprising sometimes how quickly those boulders start rolling, and you're like, oh man, and you're starting to live life in color, whatever that looks like for you.
When I was 22, I was working at a video store, and this girl transferred over from another store to work for one night.
Yep.
I did not know who she was. I'd never met her before. Me and her are closing. She was probably 2 years younger than me because she had just started college and I think I was in college. And I said, oh, where do you go to college? And she said, Bowling Green. And I said, what are you going to college for? And she said, movie editing. And I said, oh my gosh, I want to be a director. And then she's like, cool, walked past me with some videos. And I just sat there. I'd never said that out loud to a human.
Oh, wow.
And it came right out of my mouth. And, you know, I didn't follow it up. I shoved it back in. I was like, why did I tell someone that? And that girl never worked there again. Did I ever see that girl again? I never did.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, she just was there for one night. We probably talked about movies all night. And then I went back to doing homework on accounting and stuff that I knew. And I never did get a job in any of that. Like, I graduated college and did not do that because I couldn't. Like, can you imagine me doing numbers all day or something? No. Like, I can't do it. That isn't who I am.
No.
But it was something how it came out of my mouth. Because I'd never met anyone. I couldn't believe you're going to college to edit movies. Like, what? And I would love to know. I don't even know who that girl's name is. I really don't. It's like one of those people that flashes in and out of your life.
Yep.
What is she doing today? Is she a movie editor? Who knows? Maybe she's a mom and she's happy and never worked in movies at all. Or maybe she is an Oscar winner too. I mean, I wouldn't know.
Yeah. There's one other thing I want to make sure we touch on before we finish this. So you know, forgive the if it's an indelicate segue. Oh, no. An indelicate segue, by the way, should be a chapter of something. I don't know. it's grammatically, I don't think it's right. Indelicate. No, I think it's an X right there.
So it fits you perfectly.
Anyway, yeah, there we go. Perfect. Yeah, there's the name of my autobiography right there. I want to talk because, you know, you're going through this in your 20s. The realizations that you have now in your early 50s, light years past what you realized back then and how you know yourself and your introspection. yet you met a partner, you met a life partner. does your wife know or did she know at the time that you experience these bouts, these ups and downs, or these you might experience joy differently? Did she know that at instinctively at the beginning?
I don't know. I'm sure she didn't. And you know, she is like, every single good thing that has happened to me has happened to me since I met her. Mm-hmm. And I believe was because she has never told me no. I mean, when I said, I don't know, I think I want to start a magazine about Twin Peaks because it's coming back. And she was like, yeah, you should. I think you could do that. And I think I'm going to make this movie about this person. And she was like, yeah, we could do that. And, you know, I am going to contact the 30 something people. I mean, she never says I can't do something. And I never had that before. And so it's hard for me to separate the two. Was it that I got older and I was just ready? I finally grew into who I should be. Or was it having someone that just said, yep, you can do it and we'll make it work and I'll help you. But when she met me, we met at that corporate job, and I had sort of lived a small life. My whole life, I was a stay-at-home dad. I never went out into the world. I just avoided everything because I didn't want to be in that cubicle. But then situation became situation. I had to get a job. And I went into this place, a phone center. And what I found out was, and I'm sorry to say this, I don't mean to be egotistical, but that the masses at the corporation, the workers, loved me. They thought I was hilarious. I was entertaining from my cubicle, telling jokes, because I had an audience and I had been packed in for 15 years. And so she would come down the hall, whatever cubicle way is, and say, I'm having a bad day, make me laugh. Oh, wow. And I would tell her jokes and then she would leave. And then she was a supervisor and all the other employees were looking at her like, she likes you. And I was like, what? No.
Scandalous. There's a hierarchy here, damn it.
Yep. And so that sort of helped too, just because I had an audience for the first time. And then I thought, well, maybe I do have a voice. Like, up to this point, I thought I didn't have a voice that was worth sharing. And all those steps sort of helped. Now, it wasn't working at that. The higher ups at that company hated me because, sure, I also was that funny in meetings and, you know.
And on the phone to customers as right. Well.
Yes. I mean, just causing havoc everywhere I went.
Yeah.
And I could feel this wasn't going to work out in the long run.
Yeah.
Without Jen, I can't say, I can't imagine I would have made it.
Well, and you bring her up in the book, which is why I felt comfortable enough to bring, we don't do a pre-interview, folks, surprisingly. Yeah. We don't do a pre-interview.
We just do indelicate transitions.
That's right. That's exactly what we do. Indelicate segues. Well, you mention her in the book and you give a very similar, glowing set of compliments to her about that. By the way, In a moment of your greatest hell, being in a cubicle office environment, which is not you, clearly not you. I think it's very evident through the conversations that we've had to everybody that that's just not you. Horrible, horrible situation. You ended up pulling an angel out of hell. Up getting some of that. So sometimes when you're going through this shit, boys, you're still going to pull some amazing life-changing things out of these horrible situations, not just the learning, but sometimes you get a North Star of a partner or something out of that as well. So there you go. That's a nice little piece of PS on that one.
Yeah. I mean, but I also think you had to be open to it. And as much as I wasn't where I wanted to be, I was closer. I was at least driving my own ship. And I was really just there for money. And at that time, I started writing Scott Luck stories, which was the first thing, because these stories were coming to me and I was telling them, is really what was happening. I was meeting new people and I would just tell them a story here and there and they were all laughing, and then people would come and be like, tell him that story about your twins. And I'd be like, and then I was like, is this funny? Because I had up to that point been told, no, you don't tell those stories. You don't act up. You don't try, you know, you are an embarrassment. You got to
conform, you God down. Damn it.
Right.
Yep.
And as soon as I let me out, I have been successful. Now it's a fear to me. That's where the depression still, it can come up, but I'm also doing what I want to do. And that makes it so much easier, but it's also a fear. Like, will I get put back in that cubicle? I mean, that's my greatest fear.
Okay. Oh, well, I love this. This is something I wanted to talk about. If it does still come up and what you do, like, God, talk about there's a professional segue, folks, right there. this stuff, it's not like this stuff went poof and it's gone.
It's 100% still in me. 100%.
Yeah.
It's still there. The difference is I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I'm actually making a ton of people I don't know happy, which is really all that I ever really wanted to do. And that makes it better. Not as many as I should be. I could have another ton. So, you know, we could eat too.
Sure.
But bored is enough. It's still there. But now I know it's like that friend, and it's like, oh, it's going to tell me I can't do it. But then it's hard to look. I look and I'm like, well, I don't know. I got all those books on the shelf over there. I think maybe you're wrong and I can do it.
Yeah.
And then also I have to do it now because I got to keep product out there or this doesn't work. And just like the Lost Highway book, I didn't know I was doing a Lost Highway book 4 days ago, and I've already made the front cover. I called Bill Pullman's manager to try to get an interview with him for this book. I mean, they didn't take my call. They put it to voicemail. No one's called me back. But what they don't know is I'm going to keep calling.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing. So that's why I wrote that chapter. More, again, it's not about me. It's about that stranger that maybe thinks, well, this guy, mm-hmm. He knew all these people. Like, there's no one in that Fire Walk With Me book that I knew or had a connection to. I got each one of those interviews by begging and pleading and giving and being nice to them. That's the key. I'm not fake nice. I actually care about what they're saying and I'm giving everything over to them.
We're going to finish with kindness. We're not going to quite finish right yet. I'm going to hopefully be able to insert one more point into this. I wasn't going to do it because I felt like, just full disclosure, this podcast very, very, very easily could have been, hey, let's talk Twin Peaks and let's just go down the rabbit hole and talk Twin Peaks. Cause I'm a huge Twin Peaks fan as well. And this book is like, holy shit, is it ever, it's like chocolate and marshmallow and graham crackers over a campfire, how beautiful and perfect it is. We could have geeked out over Twin Peaks. And I'm hoping before we're going to finish with the kindness, and because that's how you finish the chapter, by the way, and you talk about, and the book, you talk about your religion being kindness. I want to finish with that. Let it be the angel at the end of our episode about depression. But there is one other part I'm going to bring up. And the reason I'm going to bring it up is because you talked about it with Patricia Arquette. And I think that it can translate to folks because it's a beautiful analogy of not waking up. You woke up. It took years. You figured it out. And you became aware and then vulnerable. And now you're on the path to doing what you're supposed to be doing, which leads to fulfillment. I think we've done a really good job of making that point. It's also possible to live in blindness. And there's an example out of the book I'm going to go back to with Patricia Arquette. You wrote her a letter, have her your books sent to her. It may not get to her. And,
right.
and it might say it are people, right?
Sure.
In the book, you talk about your encounter with Chris Isaak.
Mm.
And oh my God, this part broke my heart. And maybe, I don't know if you want to sure. tell the story, if you know where I'm going yeah. with this, but
I know exactly. Shit. And you know, it's an interesting thing because I could have gone a lot of ways with that part in the book, but I just thought I'm just going to tell this as it happened. So if you are a Twin Peaks fan, there really are two interviews that people are dying for. And really one is Chris Isaak and one is Moira Kelly. And neither of them are in the book. And, but you know, I think I got to both of them, but neither of them are in the book. I mean, hey, it happens. So with Chris, this was when I was living in Ohio and he was performing in Cleveland. So we bought tickets and I even paid for the meet and greet, which was something like $300. It was a lot. Yep. But I was like, whatever, me and my wife went, we paid for the meet and greet. And it was actually pretty cool. He comes out and he sings two songs on the acoustic guitar with just the meet and greet people. And then you go up and you get a picture and he'll sign something. Yeah. So I brought up a Blue Rose magazine and I slid it across there and he said, Blue Rose, that's my line in Firewalk with Me. And I said, I know, I know. And he said, you started a magazine from my line of a movie? And I said, yeah, I did. And I said, I'd like to interview you. And he was like, I want to do the interview with the guy who started a magazine from something I said. And he's like, calls this guy over and he's like, get this guy's information. I want to do this interview. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to take a picture. And it was a weird setup because he signed here and then he walked over there to take the picture. So we take three steps together and he puts his arm around me and he said, my people hide me from everything. And I really want to do this interview with you. And then stand back and snap a picture. And then I'm gone. And I say in the book, and I know it's like hyperbole, but I think those were the loneliest three steps I've ever taken in my life because yeah. he really did put his arm around me and he wasn't talking to me. He wasn't telling me this. It was like he just said it out loud that he said his people protect him for everything. And the funny thing is, they didn't give me Chris Isaak. I emailed that email. I mean, if it probably 14 times.
Yeah.
And the first time, I think they probably didn't respond. I sent again. Then they said, oh, we're going to bounce this upstairs. And I'm like, upstairs? Chris Isaak said he would do it. What do we have upstairs to God here? Who yeah. are we going to yeah. above Chris Isaak?
Yeah.
And then they came back and said, no, we've talked to the powers that be. We're not going to do this. And so I actually then did email them and said, look, I'm putting in this book that Chris Isaak said yes, and you stopped it. I just want you to know it's up to you. I really don't care. I'm going to print in a month. And they did respond then and said, oh, we'll see what we could do. But again, nothing happened.
Right.
I don't believe that Chris Isaak said no to me. I really don't. He yeah. wanted to do this. He was so touched by it. But I didn't get him.
You've done a beautiful job of retelling the anecdote, but also tying it to what we've been talking about. Because that's a choice, in my opinion. That's a choice. You know, and I'm not trying to make commentary on where Chris is at. His life is designed the way it is. Could Chris make a choice to overpower his people and say, no, or is he feeling defeated? Like you said, you don't know that he was talking to you when he said those words.
It didn't feel to me. All I can say is what my feelings were. Sure. It didn't feel to me. Like we didn't bond or something. I mean, we had 3 seconds while he signed an album of mine. Yeah. He yeah. just said like, oh, my people protect me from everything. And I really want to do this.
Yeah.
Like, he's not saying that to me. Why? What do you mean? I want to do this. You want to do this. I have an idea. Let's do this. And, you know, there's things that I regret because I wish I would have said, well, let's do it right now. But I thought he's preparing for a show. I mean, it was before the show and I don't want to bother him. And he said, yep. yes. I mean, I'm feeling like I got my Chris Isaak interview. It was worth $300.
Yep.
We got this.
Yep.
And I mean, I got that guy's. And I did tell Chris also, well, my email's in that magazine. Because I mean, I don't know. I gave him a copy too.
Well, and there we go. Like right there, there's a lot of us men who are knowing that we want to make a change, but we don't speak up enough to do it. We don't go and get the email and be proactive and say, you know what, I'm going to do this on my own. we don't necessarily do. And that's a choice that many of us make too. I think Scott and I would both submit. And I mean, again, sometimes depression and things like that need clinical help. And we're not saying that this is a clinical help, but one of the ways sometimes to the light is by not just admitting it, but actually taking a step or two towards it and making the choice to do that. Because there's a lot of guys who make the choice not to, and they still sit in it. And both Scott and I are both saying, hey, no, you know what? Make the choice. It's worth it. It's worth it to move into that place of authenticity. And this is where I want to finish the interview talking about that, because you finished this chapter talking about that, how you can break free. You can get out of the situation that you're in. And it's extremely empowering the way that you finish this. It's beautiful. And I was on a plane when I was reading it. And I sent a bunch of text messages before we got back into cell zone and all that, because it was so important to me to say those words to you after I finished reading that. It was beautiful. And there are so many guys that need to hear that empowerment. And then you finish, you know, you have the interview with Cheryl Lee, and you button up the book so beautifully. And then you go into, again, so it's a chapter later where you talk about this empowerment piece, break free. And then you talk about the way that you finish every book. You talk about how your religion is kindness. And you're a guy who doesn't experience joy the same way, apparently, that many other people do. You have bouts of depression, yet kindness is such a tether to you. And so that's where I wanted to finish the interview right here, with that empowerment piece and then the kindness piece. And then we can ride off into the sunset and do our thing. So I think it's important that you're a guy that deals with depression, but kindness is a tether for you. How do those two things reconcile to each other?
A lot of it is manifesting how I wish people were. I mean, I am kind to the detriment of myself. And, sure. And it isn't, you know, I'm probably too kind. And again, like, that's a hard thing as a Gen Xer to say, because I immediately want to mock me and have someone like, I wish we were in a call-in show and boop, 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 boop. Oh yeah. Well, I was driving down I-17 and you ran me off the road. Why was that kind? You know, and just, it's like putting me up for everyone to say times that I haven't been kind. But the idea is, I feel like whatever happens to me, I'm going to process it through my junk processor, and I'm going to beat myself up and not take the rewards. So the best thing I can do is never be that person for someone else. And do I have time to tell a little post office?
Oh, no, you got it all the time that you need. Okay. Absolutely.
Okay. So this is my example of how I am kind. My Fire Walk With Me book, I was very lucky to sell a lot of copies myself to Twin Peaks fans. So I had to ship out 500 books, which is an amazing amount for one human being. Yep. Now, the problem with that is the post office does not want to take those 500 books. Yep. The post office workers don't want to. They're very angry with me. Mm-hmm. So they really only wanted to let me ship 10 a day. But I got them to say that I could do 30 at a time. So now you're starting to see how many times I got to go to the post office to get these books out. So I'm taking,
hey, I know basic math.
You didn't, because you didn't give me the number. So don't try to pull one over on us. So I'm giving the 30. And while I'm there, I'm of course going to entertain this worker.
Yeah.
Because they're doing me a favor, and sure. And we're going to sit here. It takes a while because they have to type in the zip code for each one.
Yep.
So I got bits planned, whatever I got going that day, you know, whatever bit of comedy, I'm working them.
Right.
Well, while I'm working, I'm making this girl laugh. This old guy is up front. It's Florida. So, I mean, of course it's an old guy. And he says, shut up. You better just shut up. Let her do her job. We're all having to wait while you're up there talking. And so I turned around and I said, actually, she's quite competent, sir. She can listen to me and type in numbers at the same time. But I said, Sarah, stop my order, put me in stasis. I go to the post office so much that I know everything they can do. Right. And I said, come on up, sir. And I stepped to the side. I said, do what you got to do. And the post office lady was like, no. And I'm like, yeah, take it. And he said, well, I want a book of stamps. And I said, a book of stamps? I got it. Put it on my bill. Like, this is no big deal. I got this. And the guy pulled out his credit card and he paid real quick. And then he went on his way. And I went back up and I said, you know, go ahead.
She
said, why did you do that? He was a dick.
Yeah.
And I said, because you're kind always, not kind when it's beneficial to you and not kind when you can get something. I said, I'm not going to make that guy change me who I am. He can't control me. You know who can bring me down? Only me. And I do on a daily basis. I beat the hell out of myself, but that guy isn't going to. And I mean, it kills me to make all those people wait. I hate that I have to, but what can I do? I got to get these books out.
Yeah.
I don't have I'm not Amazon. I can't get a special deal where I can ship them out. I have to do it all myself.
Yep.
That is an example of how I'm kind always. I would not yell at that guy. And that is one story of five that happened to me in shipping the firewall. I got yelled at five times from different people in this. But like, I never yelled back. I just take that in and I just shoot back kindness. And I think they kind of hate me for it, but what am I going to do? You're not going to derail me. I spent so many years of my life put away. Like, I'm not going to sit and not tell my jokes.
Yeah. And you're also diffusing the situation for yourself. The baggage of imagine if you would have just ignored him, you know, you and the gal continued on your merry way and you had to continually listen to that and it stayed unresolved for you. For you, this is resolved. And it's like, no, right. I did everything I could. Here you go. No baggage for you as well.
Yeah. And I get a good story out of it.
Absolutely. You do. And we get a good story out of it. We don't need to go into you're a living example of it. You're a living example of so many things that I adore. I just appreciate your story so much. I wouldn't be where I am, Scott, if it wasn't for you. And I'm not saying that I am is any place that's high and mighty. Where I am is in a place of authenticity. I host this podcast to help my wife with her and her team. This is the way that I am able to contribute to her He Changed It team while I'm running my financial business to keep the lights on and all that kind of stuff. It would be a bleak existence if that's all I did, but I host this podcast. The reason I host this podcast is because you wrote this book and I connected with you after being so touched by that book. By the way, I'll show it. The Last Days of Letterman. Mm-hmm. I was a little too fast there. I showed it mm-hmm. really too quickly, far too quickly.
Right. So, need understandable. To correct that.
I read the book, was moved by it. Because you had that DNA in that book too. Hey, don't think you can't do something just because you haven't done it and you've seen other people do it. Don't think you can't do it. I reached out to you. This is years ago, and it's evolved into this place where I thought maybe I could learn how to do a podcast just for shits and giggles. I interviewed you. Holy cow, I actually do have a little bit of stuff here. You encouraged me. And I've got now this crazy Letterman podcast on the side of this thing that fills my cup, scratches the itch, whatever analogy you want to use, in a way that I cannot believe is happening for me. That's just me. That's, again, not high and mighty. That's just Mike being Mike. And it's because you went and did that. Just like kindness, that kind of shit is contagious. And so I just want to encourage anybody out there who's listening to this conversation between two friends, that are finding their way in the universe, that it's not just us. Anybody right. who's listening to this can also move out of where they are right now. And I just
and if you, you are well, I appreciate that, and I'm not trying to brush off. I want to build off on what you're saying and yes. say, like, if anyone is depressed, and I would think if you're listening to this podcast, you got to be pretty low. Your life has to be really down if this is where you've ended up. But the thing is, that's why be kind. Because take what you have and roll it to someone else. You're not experiencing it. I don't have it. Well, I'm going to give it. And I've been giving that kindness out for, I don't know how many years in a row, let's say 12 or 13, where I sort of just decided to pivot. And now it's just second nature to me. Mm-hmm. I'm not even thinking about it. Yep. And it will become that. And why not do it? What good is laying in your bed or hiding in your basement? Or why hide? For what? For who? So that's how I would build off that. And thank you for your kind words as always.
It's the truth. You know, the regard I have for you and this kinship that we have. And I just love when our lives intersect. And I look forward to all of the new ways that's going to happen down the line. As we finish off here, let's, if you want to follow Scott, if you want to support him, Scott, what are the best ways to do that on social media? Because you're very accessible. People can reach out to you and you will reach out back. You know, what are the best ways to contact you and to get your works?
Scott Luck Story is my Twitter @ Scott Luck Story. My website is scottryanproductions.com. My publishing company, FayettevilleMafiaPress.com. I'm Instagram as the Blue Rose Magazine. I mean, I hate social media with a fiery passion, but I do it all the time and I'm out there. Like, you know, I don't say anything mean. I don't understand meanness on the internet. I say, what if we just all said nice things to each other on the internet? Wouldn't it be crazy if every comment was nice? Mm-hmm. I like to think about it, but it doesn't happen. So yes. And I think even if you're not that much of a Twin Peaks fan, my suggestion is if you are struggling with depression, man, check out Firewalk with Me and really see what Cheryl Lee did. I think she will be inspiring to you.
Yeah, without a doubt. You've certainly given me, I can't wait to watch the movie again. I just finished the book. This is hot off the press, this book here. Firewalk with Me, Your Laura Disappeared by Scott Ryan. Scott, once again, thank you very much for allowing me to leverage our friendship for you to do this. And thank you, by the way, Scott also threw it out there to do this. He didn't. I say thank that's you for lie. Letting us leverage our friendship, but lie. You actually. No,
that's a lie. That's a complete lie. I would never.
I'm very grateful for you. And thank you for your time here today. That is another episode of HeCast. This one's really close to the heart. I love you, brother. And I just appreciate that so much. You know, again, if you haven't downloaded the He Changed It app, what are you waiting for? Go to hechangedit.com. All the info is there. If you like this podcast, please share it with somebody that you know. That is another episode of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. My name is Mike Chisholm. Go change something.